Chapter 12, A Morning of Victory. The crooked hills and ridges surrounding the camp showed every sign of the drought and unseasonable heat. The unholy heat, in truth. Even the dullest scullion scrubbing pots saw the Dark One's touch on the world. The true forest lay behind them to the west, but twisted oaks grew out of the rocky slopes, sour gums and pines of unfamiliar shape, and trees Egwene had no names for, brown and yellow and bare-branched. Not winter bare or brown. Starved for moisture and coolness, dying if the weather did not change soon. Beyond the last of the soldiers, a river ran off south and west, the Rhizandrella, 20 paces wide and flanked on either side by hard-baked mud studded with stones. Swirling around rocks that might have made crossing hazardous in other days, the water rose short of the horses' knees as they forded. Egwene felt her own problems dwindle in size. Despite her head, she offered a small prayer for Nynaeve and Elaine. Their search was as important as anything she did. More. The world would live if she failed, but they had to succeed. They traveled southward at an easy canter, slowing when the hillside slant of the land grew too great, or the horses had to climb any distance through trees and sparse scrub, but keeping to the lowland as much as possible and covering ground quickly. Bryn's big-nosed gelding, sure-footed and strong, hardly seemed to mind which way the ground tilted, or whether smooth or rough, yet Dyshar kept pace easily. Sometimes Swan's plump animal labored, though she might just have been picking up her rider's anxiety. No amount of practice could make Swan anything but a terrible rider, nearly throwing her arms around the mare's neck climbing upslope, almost falling from the saddle going down, awkward as a duck afoot on the flats, and not far from wide-eyed as the horse. Mirella actually regained some of her humor watching Swan. Her own white-footed sorrel picked her way in delicate swoops like a swallow, and Mirella rode with an assurance and flair that made Bryn appear stolid and workmanlike. Before they had gone very far, riders appeared atop a high ridge to the west, perhaps 100 men in column, the rising sun glinting off breastplates and helmets and lance-points. At their head streamed a long white pennant Egwene could not make out, but she knew it bore the red hand. She had not expected to see them so close to the Aes Sedai camp. "Dragon-sworn animals," Mirella muttered, watching the horsemen parallel their route. Her gloved hands tightened on her reins, with fury, not fear. "The band of the Red Hand puts out patrols," Bryn said placidly. With a glance at Egwene, he added, "Lord Talmanis seems concerned about you, Mother, last I spoke to him." He put no more emphasis on that than the other.
"You've spoken with him?"
Every vestige of Mirella's serenity vanished. The anger she had to hold in with Egwene she could safely unleash on him. She all but shook with it.
"That is very close to treason, Lord Bryn. It might well be treason."
Swan had been dividing her attention between her horse and the men on the ridge, and she did not look at Mirella, but she stiffened. No one had tied the band and treason together before. They rounded a bend in the hill valley. A farm clung to a hillside, or what had been a farm once. One wall of the small stone house had collapsed, and a few charred timbers stuck up beside the soot-coated chimney like grimy fingers. The roofless barn was a blackened hollow box of stone, and scattered ash marked where sheds might once have stood. All across Altara they had seen as bad and worse, entire villages sometimes, the dead lying in the streets, food for ravens and foxes and feral dogs that fled when people came close. Stories of anarchy and murder in Tarabon and Arad Doman suddenly had flesh and bones. Many men seized any excuse to turn bandit or settle old grudges. Egwene hoped fervently it was so. But the name on every survivor's lips was Dragonsworn, and the sisters blamed Rand as surely as if he had carried the torches himself. They would use him still if they could, though, control him if they found a way. She was not the only Aes Sedai to believe in doing what she must, even when she had to hold her nose. Mirella's anger affected Bryn as little as rain affected a boulder. Egwene had a sudden image of storms whirling about his head and floodwaters swirling around his knees while he just kept striding ahead.
"Mirella Sedai," he said with the calm she should have known. "When 10,000 men or more are shadowing my back trail, I want to know what their intentions are. Especially this particular 10,000 or more." This was a dangerous topic. However happy Egwene was that they were past questions of Talmana's concern over her, she should have been grinding her teeth that he had mentioned her at all, but she was so startled she sat bolt upright in her saddle. 10,000? Are you sure? The band had had little more than half that when Matt brought it to Salidar, hunting her and Elaine. Bryn merely shrugged. "I gather recruits as I go, and so does he. Not as many, but some men have notions about serving Aes Sedai." More people than not would have been distinctly uneasy, saying that to three sisters. He said it with a wry smile. "Besides, it seems the band has a certain reputation from the fighting in Cairhien. The tale is, Shen An Kalhar never loses, whatever the odds." That was what drove men to join, here as back in Altara, the thought that two armies must mean a battle. Trying to stand aside might end as hard as choosing the wrong side. At best, there would be no pickings for neutrals. "I've had a few deserters to my ranks from Talmanis's newlings. Some seem to think the band's luck is tied up in Matt Cawthon and can't be there without him." Something close to a sneer twisted Mirella's lips. "These fool Mirandians' fears are certainly useful, but I did not think you were a fool, too. Talmanis follows us because he fears we might turn against his precious lord dragon. But if he truly intended to attack, don't you think he would have by now? These dragonsworn can be dealt with once more important matters are done. Communicating with him, however." Giving herself a shake, she managed to regain her serenity, on the surface at least. Her tone could still have scorched wood. "You mark me, Lord Bryn." Egwene let Mirella's words pass her by. Bryn had looked at her when he mentioned Matt. The sisters thought they knew the situation with the band and Matt and did not think on it much, but Bryn apparently did. Tilting her head so the brim of her hat obscured her face, she studied him from the corner of her eye. He was oath-bound to build the army and lead it until Elida was brought down, but why had he sworn? Surely he could have found some lesser oath, and it surely would have been accepted by sisters who only thought to use all those soldiers as a fool-day mask to frighten Elida. Having him on their side was comforting. Even the other Aes Sedai seemed to feel that. Like her father, he was the sort of man who made you believe there was no cause for panic, whatever the situation. Having him oppose her, she realized suddenly, might be as bad as having the hall against her, and never mind the army. The one approving comment Swan had ever had of him was that he was formidable, even if she did try to change her remark immediately to mean something else. Any man Swan Sanche thought formidable was one to be mindful of. They splashed across a tiny stream, a rivulet that barely wet the horse's hooves. A bedraggled crow, feeding on a fish that had stranded itself in water too shallow to swim, fluttered its tattered wings on the edge of flight, then settled back to its meal. Swan was also studying Bryn. The mare made much easier going when she forgot to saw at the reins or dig her heels in at just the wrong moment. Egwene had asked her about Lord Bryn's motives, but Swan's own tangled connection to the man left her little except acid when it came to him. She either hated Gareth Bryn to his boot soles or loved him, and imagining Swan in love was like imagining that crow swimming. The ridgeline where the band's soldiers had been showed only cockeyed lines of dead conifers now. She had not noticed them going. Matt had a reputation as a soldier? Crows swimming did not come close. She had believed he commanded only because of Rand, and that had been hard enough to swallow. Believing because you think you know is dangerous, she reminded herself, eyeing Bryn. Should be flogged! Mirella's voice still burned. I warn you, if I hear that you've met with this dragonsworn again. Rain washing over that boulder, as far as Bryn was concerned, or so it seemed. He rode easily, occasionally murmuring, Yes, Mirella Sedai, or No, Mirella Sedai, without any hint of distress, and without lessening the watch he kept on the countryside. No doubt he had seen the soldiers leave. However he mustered the patience, Egwene was sure fear was no part of it. She was in no mood to listen to that. "Be quiet, Mirella. No one is going to do anything to Lord Bryn." Rubbing her temple, she thought of asking one of the sisters back in the camp for healing. Neither Swan nor Mirella had much ability there. Not that healing would do any good if it was just lack of sleep and worry. Not that she wanted whispers spreading that the strain was growing too great for her. Besides, there were other ways to deal with headaches than healing, although not here. Mirella's mouth tightened only for an instant. With a toss of her head, she turned her face away, color in her cheeks, and Bryn suddenly appeared absorbed in examining a red-winged hawk wheeling off to their left. Even a brave man could know when to be discreet. Folding its wings, the hawk plummeted toward unseen prey behind a stand of bedraggled leather leaves. Egwene felt that way, swooping on targets she could not see, hoping she had chosen the right one, hoping there was a target there. She drew breath, wishing it were steadier. "Just the same, Lord Bryn, I think it's best you don't meet Talmanis again. Surely you know as much of his intentions as you need by this time." Light send Talmanis had not said too much already. A pity she could not send Swan or Lyanna to caution him if he would take it, but given feelings among the sisters, she might as well risk going to see Rand. Bryn bowed in his saddle. "As you command, Mother." There was no mockery in his tone. There never was. He had obviously learned to school his voice around Aes Sedai. Swan hung back, frowning at him. Perhaps she could dig out where his loyalties lay. For all her animosity, she spent a great deal of time in his company, much more than she absolutely had to. With an effort, Egwene kept her hands on Daishar's reins away from her head. "How much further, Lord Bryn?" Keeping impatience from her voice was more difficult. "Just a little way, Mother." For some reason, he halfway turned his head to look at Mirella. "Not far now." Increasingly, farms dotted the region, as many clinging to hillsides as on the flats, though the Emmons fielder in Egwene said that made no sense. Low gray stone houses and barns, and unfenced pastures with a few slat-ribbed cows and sad-looking black-tailed sheep. Not all had been burned by far, only one here and one there. Supposedly the burnings were to let the others know what would happen if they did not declare for the Dragon Reborn. At one farm she saw some of Lord Bryn's foragers with a wagon. That they were his was plain as much by the way he eyed them and nodded as by the lack of a white pennant. The band always flaunted itself. Aside from the banners, some had of late taken to wearing a red scarf tied around the arm. Half a dozen cattle and maybe 2 dozen sheep lowed and baaed under the guard of men on horseback, and other men toted sacks from barn to wagon past a slump-shouldered farmer and his family, a sullen lot in dark rough woolens. One of the little girls, wearing a deep bonnet like the others, had her face pressed to her mother's skirts, apparently crying. Some of the boys had their fists clenched, as if they wanted to fight. The farmer would be paid, but if he could not really spare what was taken, if he had had a mind to resist close on 20 men in breastplates and helmets, those burned farms would have given him pause. Quite often Bryn's soldiers found charred corpses in the ruins, men and women and children who had died trying to get out. Sometimes the doors and windows had been sealed up from outside. Egwene wondered whether there was any way to convince the farmers and villagers that there was a difference between the brigands and the army. She wanted to, very much, but she did not see how, short of letting her own soldiers go hungry until they deserted. If the sisters could see no difference between the brigands and the band, there seemed no hope for the country folk. As the farm dwindled behind them, she resisted the urge to twist around in her saddle and look back. Looking would change nothing. Lord Bryn was as good as his word. Perhaps 3 or 4 miles from the camp, 3 or 4 in a straight line, twice that over the country they had crossed, they rounded the shoulder of a hill spotted with brush and trees, and he drew rein. The sun stood almost halfway to its crest now. Another road ran below, narrower and much more winding than the one through the camp. "They had the idea traveling by night would take them safe past the bandits," he said. "Not a bad notion, as it turns out, or else they've just had the Dark One's own luck. They've come from Camelin." A merchant train of some 50 large wagons behind teams of 10 or so lay stretched out along the road, halted under the eyes of more of Bryn's soldiers. A few of the soldiers were afoot, supervising the transfer of barrels and bags from the merchants' wagons to half a dozen of their own. One woman in a plain dark dress waved her arms and pointed vigorously to this item or that, either protesting or bargaining, but her fellows stood in a glum, silent knot. A short way farther up the road, grim fruit decorated the spreading limbs of an oak, men hanging by the neck from every bare branch. Bare except for crows, almost enough to make the tree seem leaved in black. They had larger than fish to feed on these birds. Even at a distance, it was not a sight to ease Egwene's head or her stomach. "This what you wanted me to see? The merchants or the bandits?" She could not see a dress on any of those dangling corpses, and when the bandits hanged people, they included women and children. Anyone could have put the corpses there, Bryn's soldiers, the band. That the band hanged any of the so-called dragonsworn they caught made little difference to the sisters, or even some local lord or lady. Had the Murandian nobles worked together, all the brigands might have hung from trees by now, but that was like asking cats to dance. Wait, he had said Camelin. Is it something to do with Rand? Or the Ashaman? This time he looked from her to Mirella and back quite openly. Mirella's hat cast shadows on her face. She appeared sunk in gloom, sagging in her saddle, and not at all the confident rider she had been earlier. He seemed to reach a decision. I thought you should hear before anybody else did, but perhaps I misunderstood. He eyed Mirella again. "Hear what, you hairy-eared lump!" Swan growled, thumping the fat mare closer with her heels. Egwene made a soothing gesture toward her. "Mirella can hear anything I do, Lord Bryn. She has my complete trust." The Green Sister's head jerked around. From her stricken look, anyone would doubt they had heard Egwene correctly, but after a moment Bryn nodded. "I see that matters have changed. Yes, Mother." Removing his helmet, he set it on the pommel of his saddle. He still seemed reluctant, picking his words with care. "Merchants carry rumors the way dogs do fleas, and that lot down there has a fine crop. I don't say any of it is true, of course, but it was odd seeing him so hesitant. Mother, one tale that caught them up on the road is that Randall Thor has gone to the White Tower and sworn fealty to Elida." For a moment Mirella and Swan looked much alike, blood draining from their faces as they envisioned catastrophe. Mirella actually swayed in her saddle. For a moment Egwene could only stare at him. Then she startled herself and the others by bursting out laughing. Dyshard danced in surprise, and settling him on the rocky slope settled her nerves as well. "Lord Bryn," she said, patting the gelding's neck, "that isn't so, believe me. I know it for a fact, as of last night." Swan heaved an instant sigh, and Mirella was only a heartbeat behind. Egwene felt like laughing again at their expressions. So incredibly relieved, they were wide-eyed. Children who had been told the Shadow Man was not under the bed. Aes Sedai calm indeed. "That's good to hear," Bryn said flatly. "But even if I sent away every man down there, the tale will still reach my ranks. It will go through the army like wildfire crossing these hills." That cut her mirth short. That could be disaster left alone. "I will have sisters announce the truth to your soldiers tomorrow. Will 6 Aes Sedai who know of themselves be enough? Mirella here and Shiriam? Carlinia and Beonin? Anaya and Morvrin?" Those sisters would not like having to meet with the wise ones, but they would not be able to refuse her either. Would not want to, really, to stop this tale spreading. Should not want to, at least. Mirella's tiny wince was followed by a resigned twist of her mouth. Leaning an elbow on his helmet, Bryn studied Egwene and Mirella. He never so much as peeked at Swan. His bay stamped a hoof on the rocks, and a covey of some sort of dove with bright blue wings whirred into the air from beneath bushes a few paces away, making Dyshar and Mirella's roan start skittishly. Bryn's mount did not stir. He had heard of the gateways, without doubt, though he surely knew nothing of what they were, Aes Sedai did keep secrets by habit, and had some hope of keeping that one from Elida, and he certainly knew nothing at all about Telairun Riod. That vital secret was easier to guard with no manifestations anyone could see, yet he did not ask how. Perhaps he was accustomed to Aes Sedai and secrets by now.
"So long as they say the words straight," he said at last. "If they hedge even a hair."
His stare was not an attempt to intimidate, just to drive the point home. He seemed satisfied by what he saw in her face.
"You do very well, it appears, Mother. I wish you continued success. Set your time for this afternoon, and I will come. We should confer regularly. I will come whenever you send for me. We should begin making firm plans how to put you on the Ammerlin seat once we reach Tar Valon."
His tone was guarded. Very likely he still was not entirely sure what was going on or how far he could trust Mirella, and it took her a moment to realize what he had done. It made her breath catch. Maybe she was just becoming too used to the way Aes Sedai shaded words, but Bryn had just said the army was hers. She was sure of it. Not the Hall's, and not Shiriam's. Hers.
"Thank you, Lord Bryn."
That seemed little enough, especially when his careful nod, his eyes steady on hers, seemed to confirm her belief. Suddenly she had 1,000 more questions, most of which she could not ask, even were they alone. A pity she could not take him into her confidence completely. Caution until you're sure, and then a little more caution. An old saying that applied very well to any dealings that brushed against Aes Sedai. And even the best men would talk things over with their friends, perhaps especially when things were supposed to be secret. "I'm sure you have 1,000 details to see to, what's left of the morning," she said, gathering her reins. "You go on back. We will ride a little more." Bryn protested, of course. He almost sounded like a warder, talking of the impossibility of watching every way at once and how an arrow in the back could kill an Aes Sedai as quickly as it could anyone else. The next man who told her that, she decided, was going to pay for it. 3 Aes Sedai were surely the equal of 300 men. In the end, for all his grumbles and grimaces, he had no choice but to obey. Donning his helmet, he started his horse down the uneven slope toward the merchant train, instead of back the way they had come, but that was even better from her point of view. "Will you lead the way, Swan?" she said when he was 12 strides below. Swan glared after him as though he had been badgering her the whole time. With a snort, she tugged her straw hat straight, wheeled her mare around, well, dragged her around, and heeled the stout animal to a walk. Egwene motioned Mirella to follow. Like Bryn, the woman had no choice. At first, Mirella directed sidelong glances at her, plainly expecting her to bring up the sisters sent to the White Tower, plainly gathering excuses for why they had to be kept secret even from the Hall. The longer Egwene rode in silence, the more uneasily the other shifted in her saddle. Mirella began wetting her lips, fine cracks spreading in that Aes Sedai calm. A very useful tool, silence. For a time the only sounds were their horses' hooves and the occasional cry of a bird in the brush, but as Swan's direction became clear, angling a little west from the path back to the camp, Mirella's shifting increased until she might have been sitting on nettles. Maybe there was something to those bits and pieces Swan had gathered, after all. When Swan took another turn westward between 2 misshapen hills that bent toward each other, Mirella drew rein.
There is a waterfall in that direction," she said, pointing east. "Not very large, even before the drought, but quite pretty even now."
Swan stopped, too, looking back with a small smile. What could Mirella be hiding? Egwene was curious. Glancing at the green sister, she gave a start at a single bead of perspiration on the woman's forehead, glistening in the shadow just at the edge of her wide gray hat. She most certainly wanted to know what could shake an Aes Sedai enough to make her sweat.
"I think Swan's Way will offer even more interesting sights, don't you?" Egwene said, turning Daishar, and Mirella seemed to fold in on herself. "Come along."
"You know everything, don't you?" Mirella muttered unsteadily as they rode between the leaning hills. More than 1 drop of sweat decorated her face now. She was shaken to the core. "Everything. How could you—" Suddenly she jerked upright in her saddle, staring at Swan's back.
her. Swan's been your creature from the beginning.
She sounded almost indignant.
How could we have been so blind? But I still don't understand. We were so circumspect.
If you want to keep something hidden, Swan said contemptuously over her shoulder, don't try to buy coin peppers this far south.
What in the world were coin peppers? And what were they talking about?
Mirella shuddered. It was a measure of how upset she was that Swan's tone brought no quick snap to put the other woman in her place. Instead, she licked her lips as though they were suddenly very dry.
Mother, you have to understand why I did it. Why we did it.
The frantic edge to her voice was fit for confronting half the Forsaken, and her and her shift.
Not just because Moiraine asked. Not just because she was my friend. I hate letting them die. I hate it. The bargain we make is hard on us sometimes, but harder on them. You must understand. You must.
Just when Egwene thought she was about to reveal everything, Swan halted her round mare again and faced them. Egwene could have slapped her.
It might go easier with you, Mirella, if you lead the rest of the way, she said coldly, disgustedly in fact. Cooperation might mean mitigation. A little.
Yes, Mirella nodded, hands working incessantly on the reins.
Yes, of course.
She looked on the point of tears as she took the lead. Swan, falling in behind, appeared relieved for just an instant. Egwene thought she herself was going to burst. What bargain? With whom? Letting who die? And who was we? Shiriam and the others? But Mirella would have heard, and exposing her own ignorance hardly seemed advisable at this point. An ignorant woman who keeps her mouth shut will be thought wise, the saying went. And there was another. Keeping the first secret always means keeping 10 more. There was nothing for it but to follow, holding everything in. Swan was going to get a talking to, though. The woman was not supposed to be keeping secrets from her. Grinding her teeth, Egwene tried to appear patient, unconcerned, wise. Almost back to the road the camp was on, a few miles to the west, Mirella led the way up a low, flat-topped hill covered with pine and leatherleaf. Two huge oaks kept anything else from growing in the wide depression on the crown. Beneath thick, intertwined branches stood three peaked tents of patched canvas, and a picket line of horses, with a cart nearby, and five tall war horses, each carefully picketed away from the others. Nisau Dachan, in a simply cut bronze-colored riding dress, waited under the awning in front of one of the tents, as if to welcome guests, with Saren Huygen at her side in the olive-green coat so many of the Gaidin wore. A bald-headed stump of a man with a thick black beard, Nisau's warder still stood taller than she. A few paces away, two of Mirella's three Gaidin warily watched them descend into the hollow. Croy Macon, slender and yellow-haired, and Newell Dromond, dark and bulky, with a beard that left his upper lip bare. No one looked surprised in the least. Obviously, one of the warders had been keeping guard and given warning. Nothing in sight warranted all the secrecy, though, or Mirella's lip-licking. For that matter, if Nisau waited in welcome, why did her hands keep stroking her divided skirts? She looked as if she would rather face Elida while shielded. Two women, peering around a corner of one of the tents, ducked back hurriedly, but not before Egwene recognized them. Nicola and Arena. Suddenly she felt very uneasy. What had Swan brought her to? Swan showed no nervousness at all as she dismounted.
Bring him out, Mirella. Now.
She was getting her own back with a vengeance. Her tone made a file seem smooth.
It's too late for hiding.
Mirella barely managed a frown at being addressed so, and it appeared an effort. Visibly pulling herself together, she jerked her hat from her head and climbed down without a word, glided to one of the tents and vanished inside. Nisau's already big eyes followed her, growing wider by the moment. She seemed frozen to the spot. No one but Swan was near enough to overhear.
"Why did you break in?" Egwene demanded softly as she got down. "I'm sure she was about to confess whatever it is, and I still don't have a clue. Coin peppers?"
"Very popular in Shinar and Malkir," Swan said just as quietly. "I only heard that after I left Aeldine this morning. I had to make her lead the way.
I didn't know it, not exactly. It would hardly have done much good to let her discover that now, would it? I didn't know about Nisao, either. I thought they hardly ever spoke to one another. She glanced at the yellow sister and gave her head an irritated shake. A failure to learn something was a failure Swan did not tolerate well in herself. Unless I've gone blind and stupid, what these two... Grimacing as though she had a mouthful of something rotten, she spluttered, trying to find a name to fit. Abruptly, she caught Egwene's sleeve. Here they come. Now you'll see for yourself. Mirella left the tent first, then a man in just boots and breeches, who had to duck low through the door flaps, a bared sword in his hand and scars crisscrossing his lightly furred chest. He was head and shoulders and more taller than her, taller than any of the other warders. His long dark hair, held by a braided leather cord around his temples, was more streaked with gray than when Egwene had seen him last, but there was nothing at all soft in Lan Mandragoran. Pieces of the puzzle suddenly clicked into place, yet it still would not come apart for her. He had been warder to Moiraine, the Aes Sedai who had brought her and Rand and the rest out of the Two Rivers what seemed an age ago. But Moiraine was dead, killing Lanfear, and Lan had gone missing in Cairhien right after. Maybe it was all clear to Swan. To her it was mostly mud. Murmuring something to Lan, Mirella touched his arm. He flinched slightly like a nervous horse, but his hard face never turned from Egwene. Finally, though, he nodded and pivoted on his heel, strode farther away beneath the branches of the oaks. Gripping the sword hilt in both hands above his head, blade slanted down, he rose onto the ball of one booted foot and stood motionless. For a moment Nisao frowned at him as though she too saw a puzzle. Then her gaze met Mirella's, and together their eyes swept to Egwene. Instead of coming to her, they went to each other, exchanging hasty whispers. At least it was an exchange at first. Then Nisao merely stood there, shaking her head in disbelief or denial. "You dropped me into this," she groaned aloud at last. "I was a blind fool to listen to you." "This should be interesting," Swan said as they finally turned toward her and Egwene. The twist she gave the word made it sound decidedly unpleasant. Mirella and Nisao hurriedly touched hair and dresses as they crossed the short distance, making certain everything was in order. Perhaps they had been caught out. In what? Egwene wondered. But apparently they intended to put the best face they could on matters. If you will step inside, Mother, Mirella said, gesturing to the nearest tent. Only the slightest tremor in her voice betrayed her cool face. The sweat was gone, wiped away, of course, but it had not returned. Thank you, no, daughter. Some wine punch? Nisao asked with a smile. Hands clasped at her breast, she looked anxious anyway. Swan, go tell Nicola to bring the punch. Swan did not move, and Nisao blinked in surprise, her mouth thinning. The smile returned in an instant, though, and she raised her voice a little. Nicola? Child, bring the punch. Made with dried blackberries, I fear, she confided to Egwene, but quite restorative. I don't want punch, Egwene said curtly. Nicola emerged from behind the tent, yet she showed no sign of running to obey. Instead, she stood staring at the four-eyed Sedai, chewing her underlip. Nisao flashed a glare of what could only be called distaste, but said nothing. Another piece of the puzzle snapped into place, and Egwene breathed a trifle easier. What I want, daughter, what I require, is an explanation. Best face or no, it was a thin veneer. Mirella stretched out a pleading hand. Mother, Moiraine did not choose me just because we were friends. Two of my warders belonged first to sisters who died, Avar and Newell. No other sister has saved more than one in centuries. I only became involved because of his mind, Nisao said hastily. I have some interest in diseases of the mind, and this must rightly be called one. Mirella practically dragged me into it. Smoothing her skirts, Mirella directed a dark look at the yellow that was returned with interest. Mother, when a warder's Aes Sedai dies, it is as though he swallows her death and is consumed by it from the inside. I know that, Mirella, Egwene broke in sharply. Swan and Liana had told her a good bit, though neither knew she had asked because she wanted to know what to expect with Gawain. A poor bargain, Mirella had called it, and perhaps it was. When a sister's warder died, grief enveloped her. She could control it somewhat, sometimes hold it in, but sooner or later it gnawed a way out. However well Swan managed when others were around, she still wept alone many nights for her Alric, killed the day she was deposed. Yet what were even months of tears compared with death itself? The stories were full of warders dying to avenge their Aes Sedai, and indeed it was very often the case. A man who wanted to die, a man looking for what could kill him, took risks not even a warder could survive. Perhaps the most horrible part of it to her was that they knew what their fate would be if their Aes Sedai died, knew what drove them when she did, knew nothing they did could change it. She could not imagine the courage required to accept the bargain, knowing. She stepped aside so she could see Lan clearly. He still stood motionless, not even seeming to breathe. Apparently forgetting the tea, Nicola had seated herself cross-legged on the ground to watch him. Arena squatted on her heels at Nicola's side, with her braid pulled over her shoulder, staring even more avidly. Much more avidly, actually, since Nicola sometimes darted furtive glances at Egwene and the others. The rest of the warders made a small cluster, pretending to watch him too while keeping a close eye on their Aes Sedai. A more than warm breeze stirred, ruffling the dead leaves that carpeted the ground, and with shocking suddenness Lan was moving, shifting from stance to stance, blade a whirling blur in his hands. Faster and faster till he seemed to sprint from one to the next, yet all as precise as the movements of a clock. She waited for him to stop, or at least slow, but he did not. Faster. Arena's mouth slowly dropped open, eyes going wide with awe, and for that matter so did Nicola's. They leaned forward, children watching candy set to dry on the kitchen table. Even the other warders really divided their attention between their Aes Sedai and him now, but in contrast to the two women, they watched a lion that might charge any moment. "I see you are working him hard," Egwene said. That was part of the method for saving a warder. Few sisters were willing to make the attempt, given the rate of failure and the cost of it to themselves. Keeping him from risks was another, and bonding him again— that was the first step. Without doubt, Mirella had taken care of that little detail. Poor Nynaeve. She might well strangle Mirella when she learned. Then again, she might countenance anything that kept Lan alive. Maybe. For Lan's part, he deserved the worst he received, letting himself be bonded by another woman when he knew Nynaeve was pining for him. She thought she had kept her voice clear, but something of what she felt must have crept through, because Mirella began trying to explain again. "Mother, passing a bond is not that bad. Why, in point of fact, it's no more than a woman deciding who should have her husband if she dies, to see he is in the right hands." Egwene stared at her so hard that she stepped back, almost tripping over her skirts. It was only shock, though. Every time she thought she had heard of the strangest possible custom, another popped up, stranger still. "We aren't all Ebudari, Mirella," Swan said dryly. "And a warder isn't a husband. For most of us." Mirella's head came up defiantly. Some sisters did marry a warder, a handful. Not many married at all. No one inquired too closely, but rumor said she had married all three of hers, which surely violated custom and law even in Ebudar. "Not that bad, you say, Mirella? Not that bad?" Swan's scowl matched her tone. She sounded as if she had a vile taste in her mouth. "There is no law against it," Nisau protested. To Egwene, not Swan. "No law against passing a bond?" Swan received a frown that should have made her step back and shut her mouth. She was having none of it, though. "That's not the point, is it?" she demanded. "Even if it hasn't been done in, what, 400 years or more? Even if customs have changed, you might have escaped with a few stares and a little censure if all you and Moiraine had done was pass his bond between you. But he wasn't asked, was he? He was given no choice. You might as well have bonded him against his will. In fact, you bloody well did. At last the puzzle came clear for Egwene. She knew she should feel the same disgust as Swan. Aes Sedai put bonding a man against his will on a level with rape. He had as much chance to resist as a farm girl would if a man the size of Lan cornered her in a barn, if three men the size of Lan did. Sisters had not always been so particular, though. 1,000 years earlier it would hardly have been remarked, and even today an argument could sometimes be made as to whether a man had actually known what he was agreeing to. Hypocrisy was a fine art among Aes Sedai sometimes, like scheming or keeping secrets. The thing was, she knew he had resisted admitting his love for Nynaeve. Some nonsense about how he was bound to be killed sooner or later, and did not want to leave her a widow. Men always did spout drivel when they thought they were being logical and practical. Would Nynaeve have let him walk away unbonded, had she had the chance, whatever he said? Would she herself let Gawain? He had said he would accept, yet if he changed his mind... Nisao's mouth worked, but she could not find the words she wanted. She glared at Swan as though it were all her fault, yet that was nothing alongside the scowl she directed at Mirella. "I should never have listened to you," she growled. "I must have been mad." Somehow Mirella still managed to maintain a smooth face, but she wavered a little, as though her knees had gone weak. "I did not do it for myself, Mother. You must believe that. It was to save him. As soon as he is safe, I will pass him on to Nynaeve the way Moiraine wanted, just as soon as she's—" Egwene flung up a hand, and Mirella stopped as if she had clapped it over her mouth. "You mean to pass his bond to Nynaeve?" Mirella nodded uncertainly, Nisao much more vigorously. Scowling, Swan muttered something about doubling a wrong, making it three times as bad. Lan still had not slowed. Two grasshoppers whirred up from the leaves behind him, and he spun, sword flicking them out of the air without a pause. "Are your efforts succeeding? Is he any better? How long have you had him, exactly?" "Only 2 weeks," Mirella replied. "Today is the 20th. Mother, it could require months, and there is no guarantee." "Perhaps it is time to try something different," Egwene said, more to herself than anyone else. More to convince herself than for any other reason. In his circumstances, Lan was hardly an easy present to hand anyone, but bond or no bond, he belonged to Nynaeve more than he ever would to Mirella. When she crossed the hollow to him, though, doubts sprang up strong. He whirled to face her in his dance, sword streaking toward her. Someone gasped as the blade halted abruptly only inches from her head. She was relieved that it had not been her. Brilliant blue eyes regarded her intently from beneath lowered brows, in a face all planes and angles that might have been carved from stone. Lan lowered his sword slowly. Sweat coated him, yet he was not even breathing hard.
"So you are the Amyrlin now?"
"Mirella told me they had raised one, but not who. It seems you and I have a good deal in common." His smile was as cold as his voice, as cold as his eyes. Egwene stopped herself from adjusting her stole, reminding herself that she was Amyrlin and Aes Sedai. She wanted to embrace Sayidar. Until this moment she had not realized exactly how dangerous he was. "Nynaeve is Aes Sedai now, too, Lan. She's in need of a good warder." One of the other women made a noise, but Egwene held her gaze on him.
"I hope she finds a hero out of legend."
He barked a laugh. "She'll need the hero just to face her temper." The laugh convinced her, icy hard as it was. "Nynaeve is in Ebudar, Lan. You know what a dangerous city that is. She is searching for something we need desperately. If the Black Aja learns of it, they'll kill her to get it. If the Forsaken find out..." She had thought his face bleak before, but the pain that tightened his eyes at Nynaeve's danger confirmed her plan. Nynaeve, not Mirella, had the right. "I am sending you to her, to act as her warder."
"Mother,"
Mirella said urgently behind her. Egwene flung out a hand to silence her. "Nynaeve's safety will be in your hands, Lan." He did not hesitate, or even glance at Mirella.
"It will take at least a month to reach Ebudar. Arena, saddle Mandarb."
On the point of turning away, he paused, lifting his free hand as if to touch her stole.
"I apologize for ever helping you leave the Two Rivers. You or Nynaeve."
Striding away, he vanished into the tent he had come out of earlier, but before he had gone 2 steps, Mirella and Nisao and Swan were all clustered around her.
"Mother, you don't understand what you are proposing," Mirella said breathlessly. "You might as well give a child a lighted lantern to play with in a hay barn. I began readying Nynaeve as soon as I felt his bond pass to me. I thought I had time, but she was raised to the shawl in a blink. She isn't ready to handle him, Mother. Not him, not the way he is."
With an effort, Egwene made herself be patient. They still did not understand.
"Mirella, even if Nynaeve could not channel a lick—she could not, actually, unless she was angry—that would make no difference, and you know it. Not in whether she can handle him. There's one thing you haven't been able to do. Give him a task so important that he has to stay alive to carry it out. That was the final element. Supposedly it worked better than the rest. To him, Nynaeve's safety is that important. He loves her, Mirella, and she loves him."
"That explains," Mirella began softly, but Nisao burst out incredulously atop her.
"Oh, surely not. Not him. She might love him, I suppose, or think she does, but women have been chasing Lan since he was a beardless boy, and catching him for a day or a month. He was quite a beautiful boy, however hard that might be to believe now. Still, he does appear to have his attractions."
She glanced sideways at Mirella, who frowned slightly, tiny spots of color blooming in her cheeks. She did not react any further, but that was more than enough.
"No, Mother. Any woman who thinks she has leashed Lan Mandragoran will find she has collared only air."
Egwene sighed in spite of herself. Some sisters believed there was one more part of saving a warder whose bond was broken by death, putting him into the arms, into the bed, of a woman. No man could focus on death then, the belief ran. Mirella, it seemed, had taken care of that herself, too. At least she had not actually married him, not if she meant to pass him on. It would be just as well if Nynaeve never found out.
"Be that as it may," she told Nisao absently.
Arena was fastening the girths on Mandarb's saddle with a brisk competence, the tall black stallion standing with head high, but allowing it. Plainly this was not the first time she had been around the animal. Nicola stood close by the thick bole of the farther oak, arms crossed beneath her breasts, staring at Egwene and the others. She looked ready to run. "I don't know what Arena has squeezed out of you," Egwene said quietly. "But the extra lessons for Nicola stop now." Mirella and Nisao jumped, mirror images of surprise. Swan's eyes grew to the size of teacups, but luckily she recovered before anyone noticed. "You really do know everything," Mirella whispered. "All Arena wants is to be around Lan. I think she believes he'll teach her things she can use as a hunter, or maybe that he'll go off on the hunt with her."
"Nicola wants to be another Karaigan," Nisao muttered caustically, "or another Moiraine. I think she had some notion she could make Mirella give Lan's bond to her. Well, at least we can deal with that pair as they deserve now that he's out in the open. Whatever happens to me, it will be a joy to know they'll be squealing from here to year's end."
Swan finally realized what had been going on, and outrage warred on her face with the wondering looks she directed at Egwene. That someone else had puzzled matters out first probably upset her as much as Nicola and Arena blackmailing Aes Sedai. Or perhaps not. Nicola and Arena were not Aes Sedai themselves, after all. That drastically changed Swan's view of what was allowed. But then it did the same for any sister. With so many eyes turned her way and not a friendly gaze in the lot, Nicola backed up against the oak tree and seemed to be trying to back further. Stains on that white dress would put her in hot water when she returned to the camp. Arena was still absorbed in Lan's horse, unaware of what was crashing down on her head.
"That would be justice," Egwene agreed. "But not unless you two face full justice yourselves."
Nobody was looking at Nicola anymore. Mirella's eyes filled her face, and Nisao's opened wider yet. Neither seemed to dare crack her teeth. Swan wore grim satisfaction like another skin. By her lights, they deserved no mercy at all. Not that Egwene intended to give much.
"We will speak further when I come back," she told them, as Lan reappeared, his sword buckled on over a green coat undone to reveal an unlaced shirt,
bulging saddlebags draped over his shoulder. The color-shifting warder cloak hanging down his back wrenched the eye as it swirled behind him. Leaving the stunned sisters to stew in their own juices, Egwene went to meet him. Swan would keep them on a fine simmer, should they show any sign of falling off. "I can have you in Ebudar sooner than a month," she said. He only nodded impatiently and called for Arena to bring Mandarb. His intensity was unnerving, an avalanche poised to fall, held back by a thread. Weaving a gateway where he had been practicing the sword, a good 8 feet by 8, she stepped through onto what seemed to be a ferry, floating in darkness that stretched forever. Skimming required a platform, and though it could be anything you chose to imagine, every sister seemed to have one she preferred. For her, that was this wooden barge with stout railings. If she fell off, she could make another barge beneath her, although where she came out then would be something of a question. But for anyone who could not channel, that fall would be as endless as the black that ran off in every direction. Only at the near end of the barge was there any light, the gateway giving a constricted view of the hollow. That light did not penetrate the darkness at all, yet there was light of a sort. At least she could see quite clearly, as in Telairun Riod. Not for the first time she wondered whether this actually was some part of the world of dreams. Lan followed without needing to be told, leading his horse. He examined the gateway as he came through, studied the darkness as his boots and the stallion's hooves thudded across the deck planks to her. The only question he asked was, "How quickly will this take me to Ebudar?" "It won't," she said, channeling to swing the gate shut, then closing the gateway. "Not right to the city." Nothing moved that anyone could have seen. There was no wind or breeze, nothing to feel. They were in motion, though, and fast. Faster than she could imagine anything moving. It must be 600 miles or more they had to go. "I can put you out 5, maybe 6 days north of Ebudar." She had seen the gateway woven when Nynaeve and Elaine traveled south, and she remembered enough for skimming to the same place. He nodded, peering ahead as though he could see their destination. He reminded her of an arrow in a drawn bow. "Lan, Nynaeve is staying at the Tarasin Palace, a guest of Queen Tylin. She might deny she's in any danger," which she certainly would, indignantly if Egwene knew Nynaeve, and rightfully so. "Try not to make a point of it, you know how stubborn she is, but you mustn't pay that any mind. If necessary, just protect her without letting her know." He said nothing, did not glance at her. She would have had 100 questions in his place. "Lan, when you find her, you must tell her that Mirella will give your bond to her as soon as you three can be together." She had thought of passing that information along herself, but it seemed better not to let Nynaeve know he was coming. She was as besotted with him as I am with Gawain, she thought ruefully. If Nynaeve knew he was on his way, there would be little room in her head for anything else. With the best will in the world, she would let the search fall on Elaine. Not that she would curl up and daydream, but any searching she did would be with dazzled eyes. "Are you listening to me, Lan?"
"Tarasin Palace," he said in a flat voice without shifting his gaze. "Guest of Queen Tylin. Might deny she's in danger. Stubborn, as if I didn't know already."
He looked at her then, and she almost wished he had not. She was full of Saidar, full of the warmth and the joy and the power, the sheer life, but something stark and primal raged in those cold blue eyes, a denial of life. His eyes were terrifying. That was all there was to it.
"I will tell her everything she needs to know. You see, I listen."
She made herself meet his stare without flinching, but he only turned away again. There was a mark on his neck, a bruise. It might, just might, be a bite. Perhaps she should caution him, tell him he did not have to be too detailed in any explanations about himself and Mirella. The thought made her blush. She tried not to see the bruise, but now she had noticed it, she could not seem to see anything else. Anyway, he would not be that foolish. You could not expect a man to be sensible, but even men were not that scatterbrained. In silence they floated, moving without moving.
She had no fears of the Forsaken suddenly appearing here, or anyone else. Skimming had its oddities, some of which made for safety and privacy. If two sisters wove gateways on the same spot only moments apart, aiming to skim to the same place, they would not see one another. Not unless it was exactly the same spot, with the weaves exactly identical, and neither precision was as easy to achieve as it might seem. After a time, it was hard to tell how long exactly, but she thought well under half an hour, the barge stopped suddenly. Nothing altered in the feel, nor in the weaves she held. She simply knew that one moment they were speeding through the blackness, and the next standing still. Opening a gateway just at the barge's bow, she was not sure where one opened at the stern would lead, and not anxious to find out, frankly. Mogedion had found the very idea frightening. She motioned Lan to go ahead. The barge only existed so long as she was present, another thing like Telaranriod. He swung back the ferry gate leading Mandarb out, and when she followed, he was already in the saddle. She left the gateway open for her return. Low rolling hills ran off in every direction, covered in withered grass. There was not a tree to be seen, nothing more than patches of shriveled scrub brush. The stallion's hooves kicked up little spurts of dust. The morning sun in that cloudless sky baked even hotter here than in Murundi. Long-winged vultures circled over something to the south, and in another place to the west. "Lan," she began, meaning to make sure he understood what he was to tell Nynaeve, but he forestalled her.
5 or 6 days, you said," he said, peering south. "I can make it faster. She will be safe, I promise."
Mandarb danced, impatient as his rider, but Lan held him easily.
"You've come a very long way since Emmonsfield."
Looking down at her, he smiled. Any warmth in it was swallowed by his eyes.
"You have a hold on Mirella and Nisau now. Don't let them argue with you again." "By your command, mother. The watch is not done."
With a small bow, he dug in his heels, walking Mandarb just far enough to put her clear of the dust before setting the horse to a gallop. Watching him speed southward, she closed her mouth. Well, he had noticed in the middle of all that sword practice, noticed and done the sums correctly. Apparently including sums he could not have suspected before seeing her with the stole. Nynaeve had better take care. She always did think men were dimmer than they actually were. "At least they can't get into any real trouble," she told herself aloud. Land topped a hill and vanished over the other side. Had there been any real danger in Ebudar, Elaine or Nynaeve would have said something. They did not meet often. She just had too much to do. But they had worked out a way to leave messages in the Salidar of Telaranriod whenever there was need for one. A wind that might have come from an open oven gusted up sheets of dust. Coughing, she covered her mouth and nose with a corner of the Ammerlin's striped stole and hurriedly retreated through the gateway to her ferry. The journey back was silent and boring, leaving her to worry whether she had done the right thing sending Lan, whether it was right to keep Nynaeve in the dark. "It's done," she kept telling herself, but that did not help. When she stepped once more into the hilltop hollow beneath the oak trees, Mirella's third warder, Avar Hachami, had joined the others, a hawk-nosed man with thick gray-streaked mustaches like down-curving horns. All four Gaidin were hard at work, the tents down and nearly folded. Nicola and Arena trotted back and forth loading all the camp paraphernalia into the cart, everything from blankets to cook-pots and black-iron wash-kettle. They really did trot, not pausing, but at least half their attention was on Swan and the other two sisters, over near the tree line. For that matter, the warders gave the three Aes Sedai much more than half their consideration. Their ears might as well have been up in points. Who was simmering who seemed to be a question. "Not speak to me in that manner, Swan," Mirella was saying. Not only loud enough to be heard across the clearing, but cold enough to take the edge off the weather. Arms folded tightly beneath her breasts, she was drawn up to every inch of height, imperious to the point of bursting. "Do you hear me? You will not!" "Are you lost to all propriety, Swan?" Nisal's hands were knotted in her skirts in a vain attempt to keep herself from quivering, and the heat in her voice easily matched the ice in Mirella's.
"If you've forgotten simple manners completely, you can be taught again."
Facing them with her hands on her hips, Swan moved her head jerkily, struggling both to keep a glare on her face and to keep it fixed on the other two.
I am only..."
When she saw Egwene approaching, her relief bloomed like a flower in spring.
"Mother!"
That was almost a gasp.
"I was explaining possible penalties."
She drew a long breath and went on more definitely.
"The Hall will have to invent them as they go, of course, but I think they might well start with making these two pass their warders to others, since they seem so fond of it."
Mirella squeezed her eyes shut, and Nisau turned to look at the warders. Her expression never changed, calm if a touch flushed, but Saren stumbled to his feet and took three quick steps toward her before she raised a hand to stop him. A warder could sense his Aes Sedai's presence, her pain, her fear and anger, every bit as much as Egwene could feel Mogedion's when she wore the Eidam. No wonder all the Gaidin moved on their toes and looked ready to spring at something. They might not know what had driven their Aes Sedai to the brink of despair, but they knew the two women were at that brink. Which was exactly where Egwene wanted them. She did not like this part of it. All the maneuvering was like a game, but this... "I do what I must," she thought, unsure whether that was an attempt to stiffen her backbone or an attempt to excuse what she was about to do. "Swan, please send Nicola and Arena back to the camp." What they did not see, they could not tell. "We can't have their tongues flapping, so make sure they know what will happen to them. Tell them they have one more chance, because the Amyrlin is feeling merciful, but they'll never get another."
"I think I can manage that much,"
Swan replied, and gathering her skirts, she stalked off. No one could stalk like Swan, yet she seemed more eager to be away from Mirella and Nisau than anything else.
"Mother," Nisau said, choosing her words, "before you left, you said something indicated there might be some way for us to avoid... some way we might not have to..."
She glanced at Saren again. Mirella would have been a study in Aes Sedai serenity as she examined Egwene, except that her fingers were laced together so tightly that her knuckles strained the thin leather of her gloves. Egwene motioned them to wait. Nicola and Arena, turning away from the cart, saw Swan coming and went stiff as posts, which was no wonder, considering that Swan advanced as though she intended to walk right over them and the cart. Arena's head swiveled, searching, but before she could think to actually run, Swan's hands darted out and caught each of them by an ear. What she said was too low to carry, yet Arena stopped trying to pry her ear free. Her hand stayed on Swan's wrist, but she almost seemed to be using it to hold herself up. A look of such horror oozed across Nicola's face that Egwene wondered whether Swan might be going too far. But then maybe not, under the circumstances. They were going to walk free of their crime. A pity she could not find a way to harness such a talent for ferreting out what was hidden. A way to harness it safely. Whatever Swan said when she loosed their ears, the pair immediately turned toward Egwene and dropped into curtsies. Nicola's was so low it nearly put her face on the ground, and Arena came close to falling on hers. Swan clapped hands sharply, and the two women bounded to their feet, scrambled to untie a pair of shaggy wagon horses from the picket line. They were astride bareback and galloping out of the hollow so quickly it was a wonder they did not have wings.
"They won't even talk in their sleep," Swan said sourly when she returned. "I can still handle novices and scoundrels, at least."
Her eyes stayed on Egwene's face, avoiding the other two sisters entirely. Suppressing a sigh, Egwene turned to Mirella and Nisau. She had to do something about Swan, but first things first. The green sister and the brown eyed her warily.
"It is very simple," she said in a firm voice. "Without my protection you will very likely lose your warders, and almost certainly wish you'd been skinned alive by the time the Hall finishes with you. Your own Ajahs may have a few choice words for you as well. It may be years before you can hold your heads up again.
years before you don't have sisters looking over your shoulder every minute. But why should I protect you from justice? It puts me under an obligation. You might do the same again, or worse.
The wise ones had their part in this, though it was not exactly Ji-ito.
If I'm to take on that responsibility, then you must have an obligation, too. I must be able to trust you utterly, and I can only see one way to do that.
The wise ones, and then Feolane and Theodrin.
You must swear fealty.
They had been frowning, wondering where she was headed, but wherever they thought, it was not where she ended. Their faces were a study. Nisau's jaw dropped, and Mirella looked as though she had been hit between the eyes with a hammer. Even Swan gaped in disbelief.
"Impossible," Mirella spluttered. "No sister has ever... No Amarlin has required... You can't really think... Oh, do be quiet, Mirella," Nisau snapped. "This is all your fault. I should never have listened... Well, done is done, and what is."
Peering at Egwene from beneath lowered brows, she muttered, "You are a dangerous young woman, Mother. A very dangerous woman. You may break the tower more than it already is before you're done. If I was sure of that, if I had the courage to do my duty and face whatever comes..." Yet she knelt smoothly, pressing her lips to the great serpent ring on Egwene's finger.
"Beneath the light and by my hope of rebirth and salvation..."
Not the same wording as Feolane and Theodrin, but every scrap as strong. More. By the three oaths, no Aes Sedai could speak a vow she did not mean. Except the Black Aja, of course. It seemed obvious they must have found a way to lie. Whether either of these women was black was a problem for another time, though. Swan, eyes popping and mouth working without a sound, looked like a fish stranded on a mud bank. Mirella tried another protest, but Egwene just thrust out her right hand with the ring, and Mirella's knees folded in jerks. She gave the oath in bitter tones, then looked up. "You've done what has never been done before, Mother. That is always dangerous."
"It won't be the last time," Egwene told her. "In fact, my first order to you is that you will tell no one that Swan is anything but what everybody thinks. My second is, you will obey any order she gives, as if it came from me."
Their heads turned toward Swan, faces unruffled.
"As you command, Mother," they murmured together. It was Swan who looked ready to faint.
She was still staring at nothing when they reached the road and turned their horses east toward the Aes Sedai camp and the army. The sun still climbed toward its zenith, still well short. It had been a morning eventful as most days, most weeks for that matter. Egwene let Daishar amble.
"Mirella was right," Swan mumbled finally. With her rider's mind elsewhere, the mare moved with something close to a smooth gait. She actually made Swan appear a competent rider. Fealty. No one has ever done that. No one. There isn't so much as a hint in the secret histories. And them, obeying me. You aren't just changing a few things. You're rebuilding the boat while sailing a storm. Everything is changing. And Nicola. In my day, a novice would have wet herself if she even thought of blackmailing a sister.
Not their first attempt, Egwene told her, relating the facts in as few words as possible. She expected Swan to explode in a fury at the pair, but instead the woman said quite calmly, "I fear our two adventurous lasses are about to meet with accidents."
"No."
Egwene reined in so suddenly that Swan's mare ambled another half-dozen paces before she could bring the animal under control and turn her, all the while muttering imprecations under her breath. She sat there, giving Egwene a patient look that outdid Lilaine at her worst. "Mother, they have a club over your head if they're ever smart enough to think it out. Even if the hall doesn't force you into a penance, you can watch any hope you have with them sail right over the horizon." She shook her head disgustedly. "I knew you would do it when I sent you out. I knew you'd have to. But I never thought Elaine and Nynaeve were witless enough to bring back anyone who knew. Those two girls deserve all they'll catch if this gets out. But you can't afford to let it out."
"Nothing is to happen to Nicola or Arena, Swan.
If I approve killing them for what they know, who's next? Romanda and Lilaine? For not agreeing with me? Where does it stop?
In a way, she felt disgusted with herself. Once she would not have understood what Swan meant. It was always better to know than to be ignorant, but sometimes ignorance was much more comfortable. Healing Daishar on, she said, "I won't have a day of victory spoiled with talk of murder. Mirella wasn't even the beginning, Swan. This morning, Faolaine and Theodrin were waiting."
Swan brought the plump mare in closer to listen as they rode.
The news did not relieve Swan's concern over Nicola and Arena, but Egwene's plans certainly put a sparkle in her eye and a smile of anticipation on her lips. By the time they reached the Aes Sedai camp, she was eager to take on her next task, which was to tell Shiriam and the rest of Mirella's friends that they were expected in the Ammerlin's study at midday. She could even say quite truthfully that nothing would be required of them that other sisters had not done before. For all her talk of victory, Egwene did not feel so zestful. She barely heard blessings and calls for blessings, acknowledging them with only a wave of her hand, and was sure she missed more than she did hear. She could not countenance murder, but Nicola and Arena would bear watching. "Will I ever reach a place where the difficulties don't keep piling up?" she wondered. "Somewhere a victory did not seem to have to be matched by a new danger." When she walked into her tent, her mood sank right to her feet. Her head throbbed. She was beginning to think she should just stay away from the tent altogether. Two carefully folded sheets of parchment sat neatly atop the writing table, each sealed with wax and each bearing the words, "Sealed to the Flame." For anyone other than the Ammerlin, breaking that seal was accounted as serious as assaulting the Ammerlin's person. She wished she did not have to break them. There was no doubt in her mind who had written those words. Unfortunately, she was right. Romanda suggested, demanded was a better word, that the Ammerlin issue an edict sealed to the hall, known only to the sitters. The sisters were all to be summoned one by one, and any who refused was to be shielded and confined as a suspected member of the Black Aja. What they were to be summoned for was left rather vague, but Lilaine had more than hinted this morning. Lilaine's own missive bore her manner all over it, mother to child, what should be done for Egwene's own good and everyone's. The edict she wanted was only to be sealed to the ring. Any sister could know, and in fact in this case they would have to. Mention of the Black Aja was to be forbidden as fomenting discord, a serious charge under Tower law, with appropriate penalties. Egwene dropped onto her folding chair with a groan, and, of course, the legs shifted and nearly deposited her on the carpet. She could delay and sidestep, but they would keep coming back with these idiocies. Sooner or later, one would introduce her modest proposal to the hall, and that would put the fox in the henyard. Were they blind? Fomenting discord? Lilaine would have every sister convinced not just that there was a Black Aja, but that Egwene was part of it. The stampede of Aes Sedai back to Tar Valon and Elida could not be far behind. Romanda just meant to set off a mutiny. There were six of those hidden in the secret histories. Half a dozen in more than 3,000 years might not be very many, but each had resulted in an Ammerlin resigning, and the entire hall as well. Lilaine knew that, and Romanda. Lilaine had been a sitter for nearly 40 years, with access to all the hidden records. Before resigning to go into a country retreat, as many sisters did in age, Romanda had held a chair for the Yellow so long that some said she had had as much power as any Ammerlin she sat under. Being chosen to sit a second time was nearly unheard of, but Romanda was not one to let power reside anywhere outside her own hands, if she could manage. No, they were not blind, just afraid. Everybody was, including her. And even Aes Sedai did not always think clearly when they were afraid. She refolded the pages, wanting to crumple them up and stamp her feet on them. Her head was going to burst.
"May I come in, Mother?"
Halima Saranov swayed into the tent without waiting for an answer. The way Halima moved always drew every male eye from age 12 to 2 days past the grave, but then if she hid herself in a heavy cloak from the shoulders down, men still would stare.
long black hair, glistening as if she washed it every day in fresh rainwater, framed a face that made sure of that.
"Delana said I thought you might want to see this. She's putting it before the hall this morning."
The hall was sitting without so much as informing her. Well, she had been away, but custom, if not law, said the Amarlin must be informed before the hall could sit, unless they were sitting to depose her anyway. At that moment she would almost have taken it as a blessing. She eyed the folded sheet of paper Halima laid on her table much as she would a poisonous snake. Not sealed. The newest novice could read it, so far as Delana was concerned. The declaration that Elida was a dark friend, of course. Not quite as bad as Romanda or Lelaine, but if she heard the hall had broken up in a riot, she would hardly blink.
"Halima, I could wish you'd gone home when Cabriana died.
Or at least that Delana had had the sense to seal the woman's information to the hall, or even to the flame, instead of telling every sister she could collar."
"I could hardly do that, Mother."
Halima's green eyes flashed with what seemed challenge or defiance, but she only had two ways to look at anyone, a wide, direct stare that dared, and a lidded gaze that smoldered. Her eyes caused a lot of misunderstanding.
"After Cabriana Sedai told me what she'd learned about Elida and her plans? Cabriana was my friend, and friend to you, to all of you opposing Elida, so I had no choice. I only thanked the light she mentioned Salidar so I knew where to come."
She put her hands on a waist as small as Egwene's had been in Tel Iron Riod, and tilted her head to one side, studying Egwene intently.
"Your brain is hurting again, isn't it? Cabriana used to have such pains, so bad they made her toes cramp. She had to soak in hot water till she could bear to put on clothes. It took days sometimes. If I hadn't come, yours could have gotten that bad eventually."
Moving around behind the chair, she began kneading Egwene's scalp. Halima's fingers possessed a skill that melted pain away. "You could hardly ask another sister for healing as often as you have these aches. It's just tightness, anyway. I can feel it."
"I suppose I couldn't," Egwene murmured.
She rather liked the woman, whatever anyone said, and not just for her talent in smoothing away headaches. Halima was earthy and open, a countrywoman however much time she had spent gaining a skim of city sophistication, balancing respect for the Amarlin with a sort of neighborliness in a way Egwene found refreshing. Startling sometimes, but enlivening. Even Chesa did not do better, but Chesa was always the servant, even if friendly, while Halima never showed the slightest obsequiousness. Yet Egwene really did wish she had gone back to her home when Cabriana fell from that horse and broke her neck. It might have been useful had the sisters accepted Cabriana's belief that Elida intended to still half of them and break the rest, but everyone was sure Halima had garbled that somehow. It was the Black Aja they latched onto. Women unused to being afraid of anything had taken what they had always denied and terrified themselves half witless with it. How was she to root the dark friends out without scattering the other sisters like a frightened covey of quail? How to stop them scattering sooner or later anyway? Light. How?
"Think on looseness," Halima said softly. "Your face is loose. Your neck is loose. Your shoulders."
Her voice was almost hypnotic, a drone that seemed to caress each part of Egwene's body she wanted to relax. Some women disliked her just for the way she looked, of course, as though a particularly lascivious man had dreamed her, and a good many claimed she flirted with anything in breeches, which Egwene could not have approved of. But Halima admitted she liked looking at men. Her worst critics never claimed she had done more than flirt, and she herself became indignant at the suggestion. She was no fool. Egwene had known that at their first conversation, the day after Loghain escaped, when the headaches had begun. Not at all the brainless flipskirt. Egwene suspected it was much as with Mary. Halima could not help her face or her manner. Her smile seemed inviting or teasing because of the shape of her mouth. She smiled the same at man or woman or child. It was hardly her fault that people thought she was flirting when she was only looking. Besides, she had never mentioned the headaches to anyone. If she had,
every yellow sister in the camp would be laying siege. That indicated friendship, if not loyalty. Egwene's eyes fell on the papers on the writing table, and her thoughts drifted under Halima's stroking fingers. Torches ready to be tossed into the haystack. 10 days to the border of Andor, unless Lord Bryn was willing to push without knowing why, and no opposition before. Could she hold those torches back 10 days? South Harbor, North Harbor, the keys to Tar Valon. How could she be sure of Nicola and Arena, short of Swan's suggestion? She needed to arrange for every sister to be tested before they reached Andor. She had the talent for working with metals and ores, but it was rare among Aes Sedai. Nicola, Arena, the Black Aja. You're tensing again. Stop worrying over the hall. Those soothing fingers paused, then began once more. This would do better tonight, after you've had a hot bath. I could work your shoulders and back everywhere. We haven't tried that yet. You're stiff as a stake. You should be supple enough to bend backwards and put your head between your ankles. Mind and body. One can't be limber without the other. Just put yourself in my hands. Egwene teetered on the brink of sleep. Not a dreamwalker's sleep, just sleep. How long since she had done that? The camp would be in an uproar once Delana's proposal got out, which it would soon enough, and that was before she had to tell Romanda and Lelaine she had no intention of issuing their edicts. But there was one thing yet today to look forward to, a reason to remain awake. "That will be nice," she murmured, meaning more than the promised massage. Long ago she had pledged that one day she would bring Shiriam to heel, and today was the day. At last she was beginning to be the Amyrlin, in control. "Very nice,"